Backseat Producers, episode 218, The Man Who Wasn't There.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Sam.
And we are the Backseat Producers. Oh, and that's a beer opening. Jill is not joining us tonight. Adam is in another part of the country. And so we're just hanging out.
That sounded like you popped something and not a beer cap.
No, I did pop a beer cap open. Anyhow, this is our third episode in our Modern Black and Whites quadrilogy. We've talked about Following, Rumblefish, and now we're going to talk about The Man Who Wasn't There. Next week we're going to do Good Night and Good Luck. So, that's that.
Which we might want to mention is not on Netflix. You might have to go search for it on Hulu, iTunes, or your local library or Redbox.
True. I got
sadly,
an email.
Not streaming.
Yes, I got an email yesterday from my library that they have it for me. I have not gone and picked it up yet, but they were able to acquire it for me. Mm-hmm. So I'll be watching that at some point this weekend. Sam, what'd you think?
Me. You go to me on this movie.
Yes.
You know, I thought I was a noir fan. And if these three films are any indication, apparently noir is not what I thought it was, because this movie was decidedly meh.
It was. What's funny is I'd actually seen this movie once before and didn't realize it when we picked it out. And then I started reading the description and I was like, you know what? I have seen this movie before. I had just forgotten the name of it. All right. Daryl, what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it has a rather slow pace to it, but after a while you kind of get into it and you kind of want to see what happens next.
Yeah, it's...
If you're a film buff, you'll really love this thing, because they got all the great cinematography that attached to noir.
Yeah. Yeah, so my thoughts are that it's a really good noir picture. But it just kind of meanders and tells the story it's telling. There's no deep. At least I didn't find any deep meaning behind any of it.
I
was
think
just,
that was the idea. No.
It was just a noir pulp story, and and like it's the like he says it toward the end, he's selling this story to a men's magazine, which is basically like the pulp
fiction, pulp, of the time.
Two-Fisted Tales kind of things,
right?
And that was. That's kind of what this was. It was just one of those kind of stories, a bit of a cautionary tale.
Well, not so much cautionary, but I don't want to say a slice of life, but you're looking into a guy who's basically a nowhere man. I mean, his life is totally empty.
He's the man who wasn't there.
Yeah, he's practically invisible.
Tony, you're using the movie title to describe a description about the movie. That's not allowed.
That's a pro tip. You can do that once per picture.
I mean,
no, that is a yellow flag warning.
Just the tip.
Everything in Crane's life is just like he's just drifting through. Yeah. I mean, he drifted into his job. He drifted into his marriage, and he's the only thing he did active. In his whole life, was try to extort $10,000 out of his guy so he could get into the dry cleaning business.
Yeah.
Something he knows nothing about.
This movie meandered through its 120 minutes worth of time, just like Ed Crane meanders through his life. That is the only poetic anything there is to this movie.
It's very meta in that.
Like,
very.
It was neat to see Billy Bob Thornton in this, when the Billy Bob Thornton that I know and remember in movies is like him in Bad Santa. And, you know, him in his other roles. And this is very, for me, out of character for Billy Bob.
And see, I've seen him in, like, Monster Ball or Monster's Ball. I don't remember the exact title. Then looking at him in, like, Sling Blade.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can play the very underspoken...
Everyman
really well.
And then
you see him in something like Bad Santa when he's just like balls to the wall crazy.
Or in a Japanese anime as Princess Mokonomi, he was the voice of one of the characters in there. He's a completely different guy.
That's
Daryl,
true.
You're lying. Hmm? You're lying. He's not Princess Mononoke.
No, he's not. But he's a character in there.
Yeah, he's in it.
Yep.
You're lying.
No.
Nope.
I have to
go
check.
Look at the true fact. Go look at his filmography.
True
Holy
fact.
Crap, he is. How did I miss this?
That is a failing on your part, sir.
That is
Gigo. You were too busy playing video games and whatnot.
That's right.
So, acting. I'll go ahead and start this off. I thought Billy Bob was fantastic. I thought Frances McDormand was great as the bitchy wife.
I would say she was bitchy.
Well, she was very controlling. She's
Ed's exact opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, next to Ed,
I didn't like the character, and I wasn't supposed to. And I think that she facilitated that really well.
Mm-hmm.
I always enjoy James Gandolfini in like everything he does, and this movie was no exception. And then just some of the other surrounding characters. I mean, all the performances were really solid.
Mm-hmm.
The brother-in-law was appropriately annoying.
Was that Michael Badalucco?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but the thing is, the other characters are also animated. Well, they look terribly animated next to Ed.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just like this cardboard cutout that just everything flies around. And he just sort of moves through it with this total zen detachment.
Yeah.
Richard Jenkins as his buddy, Ed, was great. That guy's, he's just wasted all the time. He's on his porch. He's just drunk. He was just watching him bob his head around, trying to like, oh, who's a good lawyer? This guy sucks. I know this guy sucks. I was laughing, and I probably shouldn't have been. I laughed at his drunk buddy Ed Abundis.
Oh yeah,
which was a ridiculous last name, by the way.
And Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, she had to ripen. She was like wine that's not ready to drink yet in this movie.
Yeah, that's true. But considering the character she played, it was fitting. I think she was well cast in that role.
Yeah, and that whole relationship between Ed and Birdie, initially, it was kind of weird. I mean, they keep teasing the fact that Ed is being slowly drawn into her more and more and more, and you think this love interest is developing. And we find out it's really not.
Something develops.
Until they're driving home, and like she goes full on to him all of a sudden. And he's just not prepared for that level of attention.
Commitment.
I mean, like,
not prepared for Roadhead in a 1950s car.
She was
on a mountain road.
Yeah, she was full on committed to that.
Yes, but I want to make you happy. I'm going to make you happy.
Payback.
I'm not want to be that happy yet.
Yeah,
little did you know that the zipper on trouser pants only goes down 3 inches.
I enjoyed all the performances in this movie. Disagree with me, Sam.
You know, so he uses the Coen brothers have used Frances McDormand in how many movies?
Just about every one of them.
Yeah, right. So
yeah, she's a staple.
She was in Burn After Reading. She was in Fargo. She was in this. Was she in Hudsucker?
I don't know.
I mean, we're not to a... Ah, damn it. What's the name of the guy who did Aliens? James Cameron.
Cameron.
We're not to a Cameron level of recasting people where he's basically got a half dozen people that he uses in a dozen movies.
Yeah, you know, but different, if you look permutations. At a lot of directors do that.
Yeah.
A lot.
Christopher Nolan's doing it already. He's got Tom Hardy. He's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I wouldn't be so... Oh, and then... who was she? She played DiCaprio's wife in Inception. What was that actress's name?
Oh, I don't remember.
So French. Something French. Anyway. Yeah. Why does he keep using Francis... Why do the brothers keep using Frances McDormand? I didn't think she was that great in this. I didn't think she was that great in Fargo. I thought she was pretty good in Burn After Reading.
I think it's just she's a solid performer.
And she may be available all the time, too.
That could be.
Sexually to both of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think to one of them anymore.
Her nickname is Finger Cuffs. Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, S66 has a really good point in the chat room that the brother that is in the barber shop with Billy Bob's character is like a character out of a play. He's way more animated, he's way more vocal, and maybe that was just like a choice in the cinematography about how they focused. They had to focus on him talking, or else it just would have been awkward silence with Ed saying nothing.
And I think it's just the choice of the character, and they had a character that needs to fill silence with something. And since Ed is like a noise vacuum, he has to just keep talking. Oh yeah, and then in that courtroom scene.
Oh, that was ridiculous.
Where he just kept going and going and going. It's like I wanted to turn around and slug the guy. Would you shut up?
Well, which courtroom scene? Because there's two of them with him. You're talking the first one, right?
Yeah. When they're waiting for the judge.
The trial to start.
They're waiting for the trial to start, and he's just going on and on and on about when's the judge going to get here? Why are we waiting on him? What makes him so important?
It was like by now he would stop. He would learn not to ask Ed because Ed's just going to sit there.
Dude, Ed's just going to look at you like you're an idiot.
Yeah,
because he is. Don't ask Ed. Ed don't know.
And then Tony Shalhoub, as soon as I saw his name in the very noir opening credits, I was like, okay, what is this going to be? Because this is pre-Monk Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
What is going to happen here? And then he comes out as this outrageous L.A. caricature.
Yeah, he was fantastic in his role, too. Everybody was solid.
The more I think about it, this makes more sense in the context of a stage play than it does in the context of a movie. The only thing that doesn't work is the narration, but if you can get somebody to stand off to the side of the stage and narrate, it works.
Right. Yeah, I'm not big on narration in general, but for this movie and for a basically silent character, the narration was what gave that character a voice.
Well, that's kind of, isn't that a trope of,
and it
of
is,
noir?
It is a noir trope that you have a very active narrator.
Right, because you're essentially watching what's going on. You're not participating in it.
Right.
Yeah. Like, there's another movie I can name that they tried it without the narration and with the narration. And it worked so much better with it. And that's Fight Club. Mm-hmm. The movie does not work without the narrator, and it's the same with this.
Yeah,
it would have been unbearable.
Right. Then again, you have to hear Blade Runner works better without.
It did not need it. I don't care what the studio said. No, it does not need narration. That movie's meant to be quiet.
Exactly. But again, that movie begs to break the trope of the overactive narrator.
Well, a film noir. It's film noir without being dark.
Yeah, well, you don't want it because that character has so many secrets
mm-hmm.
that you don't want to reveal.
Well, you're going to find them all out later. You don't need the you don't need him explaining as you go along. It's a movie that's meant to be watched. You have to watch what's going on and what's said.
Yeah, you don't need foreshadowing in Blade Runner.
No.
You don't. Okay, overt foreshadowing. Because there is some foreshadowing, some itty-bitty stuff that comes together at the end.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so there's a point when the filmmaker makes a choice to either trust the audience's intelligence or to spoon-feed them.
I don't think it's that cut and dried, Tony. I think that's what it comes out as, but it
there also comes a point when you can do it subtly, like the end of The Sixth Sense, for example. There's that flashback sequence at the end where they do kind of tell you what's going on a little more overtly, and it really didn't need it, but considering how mainstream that movie was, I think it probably served it well. Where in Following, they didn't really give us that.
You don't need it.
No, you don't. But I've seen other movies where they would have still shoehorned in a montage just to show you how we tricked you the whole time.
Tony, we're going to need a montage.
Well, sometimes you need a montage.
It's the only way to show that more time has passed in a montage.
All right.
Showing a lot of things happening at once to show a passage of time.
It all comes back to Team America.
Every movie can be circled around to Team America. Discuss. Nope, hot topic. Anyway.
One thing I might have to bring up is the use of all the light and shadow in this movie, of, you know, the real close, clean cut lines is when Ed is, say, standing in a doorway and the light is sort of surrounds him in this rather, I think they could call it the candlelight effect, where you see the sharp lines of where the light and shadow end.
What's really interesting to me is that there was some really nice, what looked like playing with the contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this movie was shot in color.
Right, and then transferred to black and white.
Yeah, transferred to black and white. So that just strikes me as a very odd choice.
No,
was the intention always to have it in black and white?
I think so.
That just seems to be an odd choice, and why wouldn't they just shoot it in black and white? No, it's not really an odd choice,
because when you shoot it in color, you can kind of, you can sit back with the effects box and really adjust in all those dark shadow patterns. The thing is, if you shoot in black and white, you have to use black and white stock, which very few cinematographers know how to use well.
Your cinematographer really has to know their stuff.
Yes, in terms of the lighting. It's very difficult
to use it effectively.
Yeah, to get the effect that you want. It's easier for them to shoot it in color with the standard stock thing, film stock they know, with the lighting they understand, and then come back in the effects, and then you can adjust all that stuff out.
You've sold me on this notion, Daryl. Lena says, one of you mentioned Ed being like a cardboard character. He actually looked like cardboard to me, literally.
Yeah, that's one thing is, if you look at Ed's costume that he's wearing, it's always pressed. There's not a wrinkle in it at all. Mm-hmm. It's like it just freshly ironed. He always keeps it so tight and neat. Even his barber's smock he wears, it looks like it's spray painted on him at times.
Yet I thought it was interesting that he was so invisible to everyone around him. Yet he smoked.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seemed like an interesting choice, that it might have made him stand out in some ways. But I guess considering the time...
Everybody smoked.
1949, it really wasn't a big deal.
No.
It's a noir. He has to have some characteristic of a noir character.
If it was more modern, then he would have not smoked, mm-hmm. I believe. All right, so...
I mean, if anything, this was a great representation of the late 40s, early 50s. It was really spot on, just the little stuff, like the we don't really know who's going to screw me or not. We don't know, you know, the door-to-door salesman.
I like the salesman who's who's got this newfangled idea, dry cleaning. Can you imagine such a thing? No water. They clean it with chemicals and no shrinkage.
That guy is slimy in everything I've seen him in.
And it was great.
And the thing is, they keep you guessing, or maybe that's just my naivete. I kept guessing. I'm like, yeah, this guy's probably going to screw him, but I could see this having a happy ending, where he's like, oh, and by the way, you're neck deep in debt, and your checks start coming in.
Yeah, because, you know, especially when he starts his sales pitch, you know, you're expecting him to all of a sudden, like, start hawking moon rocks or something, you know. He's got this such a bold pitch. And then it comes out that it's dry cleaning, and looking back from present to the past, it's like, hey, at some point somebody made a killing at that shit. So is this that story?
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking at the last minute, that suddenly something would turn around for this poor schmuck. But no, it just goes from bad to worse. The one man who can clear him of all this is found in a lake. And not in a good way.
No. No. So the twists through the point, from the point when he gets offered the deal,
mm-hmm.
$10,000 to finance a dry cleaning business. And he should have realized at some point that the deal was hinky. Yeah, yeah. All right, so you finance the whole thing, I'll do all the work, and we'll split it 50-50. This sounds like the deal that Adam and Luke made for Iron Tyrants. I'll finance the whole thing, you do all the work, and we'll split the money.
Yeah,
we'll see how well that worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, hi-yo.
Yeah, but you gotta look at the character, Ed. This guy is so desperate to get out of his, to make a break from his life. He's willing to try anything. Now, he knows it sounds hinky, but he's just got to have some sort of take a chance. And in his mind, he's saying, I just got to roll a six the hard way.
See, I don't know. I never got that impression from him.
I did.
He
seemed
to be very content with his miserable life.
No, he wasn't content. He was dying. He just didn't know what to do.
Was he paralyzed by the fact that he'd actually have to make a decision? Because it definitely, the vibe is that, oh, I stumbled into being a barber.
Right.
Oh, she suggested we get married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, all these things were made for him, so he just stumbles through his own life. Why would he not just, I mean, I guess it's part of the human condition to, well, I want this, but I can't make choices in my life to fix it.
Well, he's taking a desperate gamble now because he knows it's either this or staying at barbershop the rest of his life.
Well,
problem is staying in the barbershop the rest of your life sounds like it's a better alternative.
See, and I don't know if it was even so much that as the offer gets made to him, or at least he accepts the offer after they have dinner with
Big Dave and his wife.
Yeah. And he sees that his wife is not the person he knows at that dinner. He sees that she is acting differently around Big Dave. She is a different person.
Right.
She's flirting with him.
She's flirting. She's happy. She's animated. She's talking. And she's doing all the things with him that she never did with him.
Exactly. And if you look at where he's at in his life, everything is tied to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that's really making the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's her, is it her brother that runs the shop where
right.
he works?
Yeah,
so he's working. He's owning and working for, or he's working for the his wife's brother,
his brother-in-law.
Yeah, and.
But yeah,
everything is tied to her.
Yeah, and
now
that's
he
the
sees,
same deal that Big Dave is, but Big Dave is in a better place. Or at
you
least
beat me to the point, Daryl. Damn it.
True, but also if you look at it, that that everything is tied to her.
Mm-hmm.
That if he loses her, what does he have?
Well, he doesn't realize that.
I think he does realize that, and I think that's what actually pushes him to the choice of going for the dry cleaning business, because if something happens to her, he's got nothing. And I think he starts seeing that she might not be faithful, or she might not be as tied to him as he thought at that dinner.
Mm-hmm. Well, no doubt, it that's where the seed gets planted in his head. I mean, the dry cleaning salesman has already primed him.
Yeah.
And now this is the dinner is the final trigger. At that point, he realizes, okay, I got to do something. I got to take a chance. I'm losing the only thing that's my anchor in my life.
Yeah, I can go with that. I mean, what do you think, Sam?
You know, it's I don't think he ever really gives that much thought to it. I think he sees an opportunity and he's like, wow, I could make a choice in deciding to invest in this dry cleaning. I could do something. You know, I could not just stumble around my own life.
I could be somebody.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's necessarily be somebody. I think it's just an option presented.
Yeah, I don't think he necessarily even wants to be somebody.
Because, I mean, he doesn't know how to deal with when Dave talks to him both times. He doesn't know how to deal with the situation, so he's kind of like, well, do this.
And Dave,
I think you should pay him the money. And really, he doesn't. There's a couple things, like what it's. I think it's very out of character when he shanks Big Dave. That came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. That seemed very out of character.
Well, he didn't do it intentionally. Big Dave was choking him to death, and when he dragged him across the desk, he grabbed the one thing he could that was laying loose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he intended to do it. He was just had it in his hand, and he had to do something to get Dave to break his grip, and he just happened to stab him in the throat. I think he was aiming probably for something lower, but
you know what? What I find interesting is having a little more experience in recent months with noir, and just in general, one of the most noir characters I think from my perspective in this is Big Dave.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy with a past with a shady past that he's lying about, that he's hiding from people. He's in the situation he's in.
Well, he's his back's deceit, to the wall.
His back's to the wall. He's made bad decisions that has forced him his back to the wall. He's having an affair. He kills someone to protect his
reputation,
protect the mistakes that he's made. I think he almost seems like the main character in a story that we are following one of the side characters in.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at like some of the tropes of noir, Big Dave has a lot of them as a main character, and then setting himself up for for a bigger and bigger fall throughout the whole story.
Yeah, you could have made a whole second feature just on Big Dave alone.
Primarily, I think Big Dave would be the main feature, and Ed is the secondary. You know, revisiting the story from a secondary character's angle to get his backstory.
Because so if you were to see a movie from Big Dave's perspective, Ed comes across as a cold, heartless snake.
Yeah, and at one point, without any other context. Yeah, and at one point, Dave even tries to frickin' confess to him. Hey, I'm getting tied up with this married woman.
And,
Yeah, no one you know. I mean, that he's totally trying to apologize to him because he thinks Dave is on to him or Ed's on to him. So yeah, I'm totally down with that.
He would seem like a man in black or, the men with the blue hands from Firefly.
Yeah.
Just cold, detached, doesn't care.
2x2 balls of blue.
which would be Ed, because no sex in, a number of years.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the weird thing is, I watched this play out in real life here just a few months ago.
You had a friend who was doing the blue ball shuffle?
Yeah. And Ooh. It got weird. Very weird.
Like, like
okay, you're gonna have to you're either gonna have to stop talking or like, explain.
Yeah, so like sex club weird or like Big Dave's wife weird.
All of the above.
Oh wow. So there were squirrels and ice picks and like a jello, you know, suit.
Yeah. All that and more. And yes, there I was friends with the real life Dave. And it did not end good. It almost ended like this.
Ooh. Wow. Malaga.
People in lakes and whatnot.
Yeah. In a workshop full of very sharp objects. And I didn't know what was going to happen next. And I didn't know whether I was going to have to separate them all or call 911.
Oh, nice. Wow. So it got Jerry Springer on you.
Not quite. It stayed civil, but it got played out on Google Plus pretty loudly.
Ooh. Wow. Ooh. So we're adolescent adults now.
Well, let's say it was a young couple. Again, this was kind of like a Dave and what was her name there? Doris.
Mm.
Doris was into a lot of things, very animated, into doing things, and our Dave character was rather quiet, reserved, and into doing some very introspective things.
Are you talking Dave or Ed?
Ed, excuse me.
Ed, okay. Ed.
Yes, and she met two Dave characters. And let's say it got ugly.
Daryl, who do you hang out with that this happens?
I don't know. Hey, I just seem to be in the right places at the right time sometimes. The problem is you don't really find out about it until about a day or two later that this is all going down around you, and then suddenly it pops up.
I think the wrong person has the morality clause.
Well, let's just wait. This girl was into some BSDM stuff, and she was into it really heavy.
Hey, so long as she's not dressing like a squirrel.
Very heavy, and the husband wasn't on board with it.
Yeah, I saw that. That happened in an episode of Weeds.
And it probably ended the same way, too.
Hey, girl, you think you can take it all? Yeah, that's not for me. Uh-oh.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, like the random weirdness that is in every single Coen Brothers movie. There's always at least one thing that's just weird.
Mm.
And in this, it was Big Dave's widow.
Yes. I didn't understand what Anne was all about there.
Weird.
I mean, when she comes into the dinner party and her eyes are as big as dinner plates, I thought she was high on meth or something.
She could have been.
She looked pretty tweaked.
I mean, she was loaded. She had all kinds of money. She could have potentially been on painkillers or, I mean, any number of things.
When she walked in the
door. At that time, maybe opium.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, whatever, I thought she was going to explode at certain points. I mean, I just couldn't, her eyes could not get it any wider.
When she shows up to Ed, she's like, I know what's going on. You do? Yeah. So
yeah, that was
we were on vacation, and the ships came, and they took Big Dave.
And they took Dave.
What?
And he never touched me again after that. So
wow, that's when he hooked her up with the opium.
Well, that was again the camera work in that scene was really creepy because it shifts back and forth to her, and she's standing there in just stark contrast to the night. And when the camera flips around to Dave, you see all the leaves shadows on him moving around, which kind of adds a real unreality to him.
Yeah, and then to carry on from that, like the second to the last scene you see Ed in the film,
mm-hmm.
he goes out to the prison yard, and he sees the alien ship come, and he just kind of nods to it like, "So."
Well, like that was so weird because he wakes up and the door to his cell's open.
Yeah,
and the entire prison is empty, and I'm going, did the aliens come and they're going to save Ed? Is that where this is going? Because that would honestly not surprise me with the Coen brothers.
No, it all. Wouldn't at all. And it would have been an interesting twist.
It would be an interesting twist because the aliens pick up Dave and they essentially debrief him. How did you like your time on Earth?
They pick him up and nobody notices that he's gone.
Right.
I mean, that would have been the interesting twist.
The nice little twist would have been he was just a plant in there to experience life on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they essentially are bringing him back to debrief him now.
So that what they just plug him in and download his hard drive?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? Ed would be a perfect alien or a perfect android. I mean, he's so machine-like in all his actions.
What I'm hearing is this was a neo noir lame version of Stranger in a Strange Land.
Could be.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. All right.
Except
so,
way lamer.
I think Ed's biggest failing is that he truly believed that he was invisible and that he could get away with things because people didn't notice him. And even though he was part of the background in pretty much everything he did, people were always aware of him and people always acknowledged him being there. And I think that's ultimately was his failing, because he thought he could get away with things that he couldn't because people noticed what he did. Even if he didn't really do them. His presence in those actions ended up coming to bite him in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually the cops caught up to him. Yeah, but all based on one choice that he makes. Mm-hmm. And everything is just fallout from that one choice.
And that's where I think why this isn't a very good story, because if that were the case, and Tony, and your thesis stands that he thinks he's invisible, why did he not pull a Lester Burnham from American Beauty and just start feeling the space? What can I really get away with? Because he only does one weird thing, and the rest, I think, is driven out of necessity of just what happens to the character.
He does one other thing, though, that is very conscious and very overt.
What, when he shanks Big Dave?
No. It's when he interacts with Birdie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a natural, like Daryl touched on it. He's looking for a way out, and Doris is gone. Spoiler.
Oh, yeah.
But she's gone, and he's looking for, you know, they never had any kids. It started out as a parental thing, because he's like, oh yeah, I remember you. You used to come in with your dad. And now she's good looking and playing piano and all Scarlett Johansson'd up and yeah.
What's interesting is that he doesn't see that even from that first scene that we see her in, she's putting the moves on him. She's flirting with him even in that first scene.
See, I didn't get that. I didn't feel it.
It's there. Yeah, I got that. I got that vibe that she was making herself available to him. And everything he talked about was, yeah, I remember you as a little kid. I remember you were hanging around with your dad. He was talking to her, and she seemed to be, at every turn, turning it around like it was a compliment. And I got the vibe, even from that first scene, that she was, if not actively, passively making herself available to him. If not actively seducing him, passively making herself available to him.
Well,
saying,
see,
there's something about you. She's got a daddy thing. She's got daddy issues because her dad's kind of a...
drunk?
Yeah.
absent dad.
Yes, absolutely an absent dad.
I keep coming back to him just flopping his head around, whacking his head on the back of his chair. It's just like, and this guy, the whack. Oh, yeah, he sucks. That's another a dose of the weird. Because he did not have to be that, like, comical drunk.
No.
He could have just been slurred, kind of fuzzy, blinking a lot drunk.
Lena agrees with me. And she's got girl parts, so she knows.
So it was totally a hot for... So it wasn't a hot for daddy thing, but, like, hot for uncle?
No, it was more seeking... I think it looks more like seeking the approval of an older male.
And by approval, it means, yes, please go down on me.
Well, no. It depends on attention.
It depends on the appreciate of what I do. Yeah, it depends on the type of person. There are some people that, depending on the relationships they're in, are like, hey, love equals sex. Or, you know, love equals the physical attraction as much as it does just being a nice person. And depending on what kind of life she's led, that just could be how she responds to somebody being nice to her.
Yeah. Especially you accomplish.
Especially somebody she looks at as a peer of her father.
I think it was more of a puppy love thing because, you know, she shows interest in another guy.
But come on, it's Billy Bob.
That is irrelevant in this point of argument. Besides, he does have, like, mad pull-in-the-hot-looking chicks factor because he had Angelina Jolie before she had kids.
Yeah.
But when she was like, I do the freaky stuff.
Yeah, she was nuts. Hey,
she was the fan that does
the weird stuff. We're going to wear each other's blood in a vial around our necks.
Anyway, so...
are you, vampires? That was before being a vampire was sexy. Yeah. That was like when it was still creepy and weird and monstrous.
And if I was in high school 2 years ago, I'd have been slaying it. Good. Anyway, so that's a totally separate point. But she sees guys around at school, like most high school girls do, that stare about 8 to 12 inches below their eyes.
Right.
Right, that's where they look when they talk to them.
Yeah.
They don't care about who the woman is so much as you're just a woman. It's giggity-giggity because I've got hormones raging.
Yeah.
He shows an active, pointed interest in her hobby. He makes time to go over... And her talent. But the thing is, even she self-admits, I didn't really think of it as a career. I just thought of it as fun.
Right.
Okay, so he is seeing her and her dad multiple nights a week. He's over there showing an interest. She sees that as, oh, you care for my pastime. Therefore, it must be affection. It can't just be, I enjoy the music. A father-daughter relationship rather than sexual peers.
Right, because arguably she has no clue what a father-daughter relationship is.
Yup.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, I don't know. Maybe there's a couple points on each. We need an arbiter to decide. So, yeah, that is a little weird. Like, S mentions that the dad didn't say a word when Ed was like, he's like, oh yeah, Bertie's upstairs, go on up.
Yeah.
Really?
Because he trusts him. He knows him.
Oh, I suppose it was the 50s. It was the 50s, so... Oh, yeah, you just want to talk to her. You've talked about lessons, blah, blah, blah. It was a different time.
Mm-hmm.
True.
So I guess that really kind of changes the lens that both of our arguments have to be viewed through, Tony.
Well, you got to remember, Dad knows Ed very well. He's his barber. He goes there quite often. He's known him for years. He doesn't think in those terms that, okay, he's got the hots for my daughter. I mean, he's too old for that. Or
is there something darker there that is going on because Dad is a drunk?
Well, Dad isn't. Yeah, we don't know Dad's a drunk. Dad, we know Dad likes a drink. How often and how much is a topic for conjecture.
He rarely seems sober.
I don't see any indication of any type of weird relationship between other than a drunken vacant father type deal going on in that household.
No, but this just how she reacts. Just how she reacts to it. It's not what most people consider a sitcom father-daughter relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a healthy family.
What, like Archie Bunker?
Well, you guys, again, keep this in mind. This is the late 40s. I mean, people drank and smoked a lot more openly then than they do now. They weren't so health conscious then.
Well, that's true.
But DUIs weren't a huge issue. Then.
Cars didn't go that fast.
People didn't have to go so far. I mean, they just walked down to the neighborhood bar.
Yeah.
Or they had enough liquor on hand to quaff it down.
Yeah, they're like, oh, prohibition's over. We better stock up in case they decide to change their minds.
All right.
I can't believe we've been talking about this movie for almost an hour.
Almost.
I can't. Wow.
Oh, yeah, you can pick any topic on this movie and go off on it sideways.
Roadhead doesn't work in a 1950s truck.
Mm.
And that's a fact, because those steering wheels were like a half inch from the boys.
That's true.
And if you were a fat guy, it was rough.
Mm.
Rough, because they did not have telescoping steering wheels yet.
I know. 49.
And the shifter was on the steering column.
I thank every day for the telescoping steering wheel. I had to drive a Malibu, and that car was weird. Because the seat was just up really high. It didn't go down hardly at all. I was like, this is... I like when I got back into my Charger, it felt like I was swimming in it. I had so much room. It was like, oh, this is so nice.
Now, is your Charger the is it the RT or is it the one below the RT build?
It's the one below.
Okay.
It's like the second down from the best.
So it's... No, three normal builds, generally, like the three categories of build, are SRT8, RT, and then whatever the V6 is.
It's the RT.
Okay, so it's got the V8.
Yeah.
And it's got the headroom. It has the adjustable seats and everything. Yes. I wonder if the Malibu you had was just no options.
Nah, there wasn't much.
Yeah, it sounds like it was just like an LT, like a strip version.
Yeah. But they charged me for a full size. It's like...
Lame.
Yeah, that was...
If I'm going to have a full size, God damn it, they better give you the Impala, which is still going to feel small to you.
Yeah. I've driven an Impala, and it is more comparable to the Charger than the Malibu was.
I had a really tough time not saying Impara.
Hans Briggs.
Oh, Hans Briggs. Oh, no.
Last thing here. S6 says kids used to make martinis for dad when he got home from work. Yes.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, we didn't get all so moral and uptight until about the 90s. So.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say there was a...
Well, there was a long tradition.
Because the 60s... The 60s were like, oh, free love, man. Here's the pill. Go with the screwing. The 70s, drugs, better music. The 80s, same, except you got the HIV.
Mm.
And then the 90s is when people kind of took the corn cob and stuck it directly up their ass.
Yes, the new Puritanism.
Lena, Sam, I loved doing those notes because of you. Thank you.
I don't know what notes she's referring to.
She did the show notes. She's doing all the show notes now.
There's show notes to the Team America episode. Oh, I gotta see this.
All right. So final thoughts. Who is this movie for? Daryl, what do you think?
Daryl, go.
Film noir nuts. This is your movie. I mean, it's got everything you want. I mean, dark characters. Things going wrong, life's being destroyed left and right. I mean, what more do you know? If you like Billy Bob Thornton, you want to see him in a little different light than you're used to seeing him in.
I would take all that and add to it fans of the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Because this
is a Coen brothers movie.
Yeah, it is definitively a Coen brothers movie.
And it's one of their early efforts too, so you can see that where this is all starting to go.
Sam, anything to add to those?
Yeah, it's definitely for a fan of the Coens. I think it should be viewed by people who want to see what the 50s were like. You know, because there was a class I remember taking in high school, and I did a report on the 1950s and the culture of things, you know, the Korean War, mm-hmm. and things like that. Because honestly, I felt this movie felt better in a 1950s context, which I have erroneously said throughout the entire episode, because it's very clearly set in 1949.
Right.
But, I mean, the cars, I mean, in 49, you've really got, I mean, that's probably what sticks it in my head, but, or maybe
you're,
it's...
What you're looking at, I mean, there's an era there where you're calling the 50s, it was actually 1949, it's post-World War II, pre-Korea.
Yes.
It's that post-World War II industrial build-out,
people are changing. I mean, deprivations are over. People have money again, and they're kind of now searching for this brave new world. I mean, everything's possible.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you had a generation of people that grew up in, you know, they started in the 20s. They lived through the Depression. They lived through World War II. And now they're catching their breath.
Right.
Hey, after all of that.
We survived all this. Hey, people have jobs. I got money. I mean, I've got all these material luxuries. There's no more shortages of anything.
There's no active war. Mm-hmm. There's an industrial buildup. There are jobs to be had. Families are growing.
Or starting, because they were delayed for so many years.
True.
So basically, it's a 5-year collective sigh.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
because the Korean War started in the middle of 1950.
No, 52.
No, June 25th, 1950, bro.
Oh, 50. Okay.
Yeah, because this was still pre-Korea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Korea doesn't really build up for another 2-3 years after that, till it reaches its crescendo. But for most Americans, Korea was a non-event.
It wasn't. It was a bump in the road between mm-hmm.
prosperities.
Yeah.
It was a sigh of relief. It was the after party after the. I guess it was actually the let's wake up and be serious adults now after the after party of World War II, because let's face it, a lot of people got home and just basically screwed for weeks on end. Hence the baby boomer generation.
Truth. Mm-hmm. Either that, or they came, they came home and looked to settle down and took a year or two to find a spouse, get married, get a job.
Go to school. GI Bill was now in full swing.
True.
So.
And just begin their adult lives.
Yeah. So college was a zoo in the 50s. Basically, that's when all the fraternities were founded that Animal House became the mm-hmm. natural descendant of.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Yep.
Now, I honestly didn't think we'd get this much discussion out of this movie, and I was kind of down, but I'm really impressed with the content we've generated. I'm also not wasted at the end of this episode, so awesome.
I'm 3 beers in, feeling pretty good.
Excellent.
And I don't have to do backseat box office tonight, so...
You do or don't. Better.
Do not. We're doing it tomorrow night.
Nice. And what I have to say to that, Tony?
EDF?
No, Bok Bok Durkallah.
Durka Durkistan.
Durka Durka. Muhammad Jihad.
All right. Let's be done. Next week, good night and good luck.
Yes, our dovetail to this movie.
Yes. Yeah, and the
what
last
we, what are we
of
doing
the,
after that?
Mm-hmm. Haven't decided yet.
I think we need to do a movie that is something equally ridiculous to bookend this noir, because we started with Team America, and then we did some serious...
Dead men don't wear plaid.
I don't know what that means, Tony.
Oh, no, you have not seen that yet.
I don't know what that means. I was thinking Weird Science, but
no,
because this would be thematically fitting.
You haven't had my Java till you've had my Java.
I don't know what that means.
It's Steve Martin.
It's
yes.
Steve Martin.
Do I look
doing...
like a broad? Well, not much as I do. I haven't turned on the charm
How about
yet.
Dirty rotten scoundrels.
No. See, it's black and white.
Yes, it's a noir.
Oh, it's a noir. On. It's a noir. It's a noir comedy. It parodies and satirizes noir films.
And it does it so well.
It actually does it pretty well. It might actually be good to do just to bookend this.
Yes, with a comedy
to make fun of. Some of these tropes that we've subjected
to dial
ourselves
down
to.
The serious a tad,
or just keep it rolling after that. Do Sin City.
Tell you what, let's go ahead and throw it out on the Twitters and see if other people have a suggestion for a black and white or noir film that we can do to bookend this discussion.
Yes,
since this episode won't be released for a while, mm-hmm. we can't actually do it with this episode and make the call out. But if we throw the word out on Twitter, maybe we can get some responses.
Some fan feedback here.
And we can make the decision by next week.
Okay.
Right on.
So for all you live characters in the chat room, start hitting the internets.
Lana. So for Lana.
who will be editing this episode, so you get to listen to it again.
Yeah, so when I said Furlana, there's a Billy Joel song called All Furlana. I don't know why, it just popped out in my head. Anyway, that's it. Good night, all.
Good night.
Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Next week.
See ya.
See ya.
Good night and goodbye.